Unfortunately, his underwear accidentally inflated while he was on the subway.
What?
Instantly expanding to 30 times their normal size.
30 times?
And nearly suffocating his seatmates.
Wait a minute.
Hello, welcome to Guides to the Unknown. I'm Kristen.
And I'm her little brother, William.
And this week, we're going to the John.
We are. We're hitting the head.
For a little light reading. Actually, what you have there is not light reading.
I've got...
That's a doorstop.
This might be one of the thickest books I own.
And that is the fully loaded 25th anniversary version of Uncle John's Bathroom Reader.
Yeah, this is going to be a weird one, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very excited about it.
Oh, I had a great time doing my research, if you can even call it that. So we're going to talk about any kind of spooky stuff that you could come across in an Uncle John's Bathroom Reader.
Do you think now, this has made its way across the entire globe? Do people know what we're talking about everywhere?
That's what I was about to say. I feel like some people may not know what we're talking about, maybe because they haven't encountered a disgusting person who keeps a full library
right.
in their bathroom. It kind of... You know how they say that there's like, you know, like 80% of money is covered in feces?
Yeah, yeah.
That's just dollars. Those don't come out in the bathroom a whole lot.
Right.
A book that lives in the bathroom must be chock full of it.
It seems like a problem to me.
Yeah, and yet William, and I appreciate you doing this, bought these Uncle John's readers for us to research from.
I did.
And the one that I ended up with, he had to buy used.
It was the only option. Now, the one that Kristen's holding, I think, is arguably rare.
Yeah, maybe.
It's exclusively strange and scary stories in that
right.
book. Now,
And it's the bathroom reader for kids only. So it's strange and scary, but still... Actually,
that's even worse.
Gentle enough for kids. Actually, there's a bunch of stuff in here where I was like, this is for kids.
Oh, the stuff that people make for kids is sometimes really messed up.
Yes.
Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark was incredibly...
Absolutely.
...frightening.
Disturbing.
But for people who don't know, just in case... The Uncle John's Bathroom Reader book series. This is a franchise.
Oh, it's huge.
They are books of short stories, fun facts, jokes, sometimes limericks.
Yeah.
One after another. The idea being that when you're in the bathroom, you'll have something to read.
Right. And so it's all written in these short snippets so that you can kind of customize how long you're reading to whatever your bathroom experience is. So maybe you only have time for one limerick. Maybe you have time for a few pages on how you make a mummy.
Oh, is that right? You have how to make a mummy?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, my book is the, as you said, Uncle John's Fully Loaded 25th Anniversary Bathroom Reader by the Bathroom Readers Institute.
Right.
And on the cover art here, if it's not immediately clear, there are 25 birthday candles positioned on a toilet tank lid and a rubber ducky with a little bow tie on.
Of course.
Now, this book series, I looked into it a bit. It first was published in 1988.
Yeah.
By John Javna. Referred to as Uncle John Number One.
Mm-hmm.
And his brother, Gordon.
Also John.
Yeah, Gordon, Uncle John Javna.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because they're both
Uncle John of Uncle John's Reader.
Exactly.
So, kind of a Carolyn Keene situation, how Nancy Drew was written by like a collective.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's interesting. But just like Guide to the Unknown is a sibling run show, the Uncle John series is a sibling published bathroom book
series.
You're
absolutely right.
So we've got this recollection from Uncle John Number One in my book here. Late in 1987, when I first took the idea for a bathroom reader to the New York publishers, it seemed the series might never even get started. Times were different. The idea of a book designed for the bathroom made editors squeamish.
Times are so different now that that is lauded.
Yes, yeah. Now we all celebrate this commonly
right.
out in public, in the streets. I'm going to go in and read a good book on the John.
John, don't worry. I have a full bookshelf in the John.
I got it. You might, because there are 35 plus of these.
I know. That's why I was saying that.
There are dozens.
There are even spin-off series. There's a series called Uncle John Plunges Into, and it's different states. That's a geographical sort of thing.
I saw that. So there's an Uncle John's about New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
We should get that.
Yeah.
Depending on how this episode goes, we'll see. I got a unanimous no thanks, complete with disgusted grimaces. But when I got back home to California a few weeks later, a message was waiting. St. Martin's Press had decided to give it a try. Mm. The good news for BR fans, bathroom reader fans, is that St. Martin's had really just bought the concept. They didn't care about the contents.
Oh, wow. Dig on St. Martin's.
Which is why it's all loaded with, like, non sequitur. Here's a short story. Here's some trivia.
Right.
That's why it's full of just, like, random bits of data.
Because they were given that freedom.
They just had the marketing idea of, it's a book for the bathroom.
Yeah.
Put something in it. Yeah. And so we have this. Yeah. My book is celebrating 25 years of the series. Mm-hmm. But this book was published 10 years ago. So it's been 35 years.
Yeah.
And my book is loaded with
Longer, actually, because if you said it started in 1980.
87.
Okay,
87,
okay.
88.
Uh-huh.
So this book has so much that, like, a lot of it is just, like, you know, here's some music that have been in movies.
Yeah.
Here are satirical headlines.
Yep.
Published by other people.
Right.
So they'll just take things written by other people and just publish them in this book.
It's an aggregator.
Yes. But that's why I'm thrilled that your book is specifically for scary stuff.
Yeah.
But it was hard to find.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you did, Will, because it's chock full. So it seems like maybe because, what was it, St. Martin's didn't really care too much about the content.
Yeah.
Eventually Uncle John's moved over to Macmillan, which is another big publisher in the U.S.
Okay.
Because I also did some research. I wanted to know, who is the Bathroom Readers Institute?
Yes.
What is going on here? So I did some Googling and I found a blurb about them on the Macmillan website. It says, in 1987, Uncle John found himself stranded on his throne with nothing to read. That's when he came up with the idea to launch a series of trivia books specifically tailored toward his fellow bathroom readers.
Inspiration struck.
Right. He gathered together the best trivia writers he could find and charged them with the task of combing the worlds of science, history, sports, politics, and pop culture to compile dozens of interesting articles that could be absorbed in just a few minutes. Now, with more than 10 million books in print and a membership base topping 40,000 loyal readers, the movement begat by Uncle John is stronger than ever.
How can people possibly be loyal readers of this?
Well, here's the thing. You could sign up to, like, join the club or something like that. So here is the last page of my book, Uncle John's Strange and Scary Freaky Facts About Peculiar People. It says, the last page, fellow bathroom readers, bathroom reading should never be taken loosely. So sit down and be counted. Join the Bathroom Readers Institute. It's free. Just go to bathroomreader.com to sign up or send a self-addressed stamped envelope and your email address to this address. You'll receive a free membership card, our BRI newsletter sent out via email, discounts when ordering directly through the BRI, and you'll earn a permanent spot on the BRI honor roll.
What?
So that is how you become this.
I want a spot.
So here's the thing. I looked into it. Of course, I would want a spot.
Of course.
They have changed the name.
Oh.
It's not the Bathroom Reader Institute anymore.
Really?
Now their imprint is called Portable Press.
Oh.
So you go to the website for Portable Press, and it says, instead of that fun thing with, like, you know, wordplay about being loose with things and stuff.
Yeah.
Those with a penchant for obscure facts, bizarre stories, and astounding records come to Portable Press for all their trivia needs. Publisher of the annual best-selling Uncle John's Bathroom Reader, Portable Press brings the fun and laughter to reference books via smirk-inducing dad jokes, top 10 lists, comic book-inspired historic biographies, and more. So they have rebranded to make themselves less specific to the bathroom.
Oh.
And now they're saying you can take these little books with you just about anywhere,
which,
not just the bathroom.
I was going to say, this entire concept feels outdated to me, right?
Well, in some ways, but also, in entrepreneurial circles, they say the riches are in niches.
That's true.
And did they have a niche? They sure did. Making it just portable press is maybe widening the net.
Well, what the hell's not portable now?
I know. That's a very good point. I don't know.
Read at literally every book ever made on my phone.
Yes.
You know?
It's true. Yes.
Like, and the entire idea that you're going to be in the bathroom and have nothing to do is gone. That has evaporated.
It's a thing of the past. So I feel like you're right. They rebranded in a weird direction rather than leaning into, oh, don't worry about it. It's a small book. It's portable.
Right.
Like a million things are portable now.
Who cares?
I feel like they should have leaned harder into the bathroom.
I couldn't agree
more. Even though I joke about there being disgusting people with books in the bathroom, you know, I get it. Of course, I understand. You want to read a little something.
Of course. I think everybody's up to something in there.
Oh, look, everybody's on their own trip in there.
They absolutely
are. So I joke and pass judgment, but I get it.
Yes. But the idea that you would go into the bathroom and find some, you know, water-damaged Uncle John's by the toilet brush.
A swollen Uncle John's.
Open it up and find, like, notes in the margins that your dad left. Like, I just, like, this entire idea is, like, it's, like, from an alien world.
Yes.
I don't understand.
Yes.
It is, I think, now, were you must, we knew these books, obviously.
Yeah.
We, I think, had one or two.
I guess so.
I don't really
remember that.
I'm going to choose to remember history thusly.
Okay.
Our father, Richard Rogers.
Now don't besmirch him.
Had I think, lofty literature tastes.
Yes.
He loved a good mystery. Avid reader.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that he was the target market for an Uncle John's.
In some ways he was.
But we had them sometimes. I posit they were given to him as gifts.
I was about to say, it must have been a joke gift.
And that he would be like, oh, yeah, very, very funny.
Yeah.
I bet that he might not even have really liked the idea.
Maybe not.
I admit, I myself, Kristen.
Yeah.
I christened the throne. I bristle at the notion of these books at all.
Yeah.
I think they're disgusting.
It's
I
gross.
Think that the fact that we had to buy that book.
Yeah, I know.
Used.
Luckily, there weren't any, and I read every page of this thing, or at least skimmed it. I didn't see any outward disgusting.
It's a long session.
I did it in the living room, not on the John.
Kristen has a toilet in her living room.
I like to be comfortable. I didn't see any outward signs of that kind of wear, thank God.
Okay.
Definitely when Will told me that he bought this used, I was like, are you crazy?
I had no choice.
Absolutely not, but I completely understand.
Especially a kid's book where, like, the amount of times I've heard parents say to their kids, like, did you wash your hands?
Yeah.
Like, the amount of times people have to check that.
Right.
Come on. I'm not buying a used kid's book.
But even so,
that's intended for the bagno.
Even if they did wash their hands, you're touching this and reading it before the hand washing. Anyway.
Oh, I know. Oh,
so that
yes.
helps nothing at all.
You're very right about that. But I will say, last story, and then we'll tell some tales from these books. I ordered these books, right? And they came from Amazon, wherever.
Right.
And I knew what had been delivered. So I left that one in its plastic bag.
Right.
I didn't even open it.
Yes.
When Kristen took it from this house, it was still in the plastic bag, shipped the way that it was thrown on my doorstep.
Mm-hmm.
I have avoided touching it.
Yeah.
Kristen came over today to record. Before she even said a word to me, she placed that book on my arm.
Yes, it did.
Like on my
skin. I wanted you to touch it.
I am so annoyed that I have touched that book now. I wasn't even saying it, but I was trying to avoid touching that.
I don't know. I must have sensed it. And
I think you did.
Made it not so.
It's like when you, anytime you get a tattoo and I, for some reason, become the guy
smack
to be like,
it.
How you doing, pal? And smack you on the shoulder. Never, ever am I like that.
Yep.
Somehow, subconsciously, when you have a tattoo, I know I got to hit you right
there. Yeah.
You put the bathroom book on my arm.
Yes, I did.
And I did not like it.
Well,
anyway, we may proceed.
I wanted you to see all of the nifty little marks that I made in it. I have those sticky post-its.
That's true.
Like when somebody's getting divorced or something and they have these things that are like sign here. I have that in the Uncle John's.
It's weird that that's your frame of reference for post-it notes.
Well, they're not post-it notes. They're the like sticky arrow
flags,
notes.
Yeah,
flags. Right.
Yeah.
So before we dive into the bowl, I wanted to read you a review from the the start of the book. It's under the Reader's Raves section.
Okay.
And said from it's from some of our strangest and scariest readers. Here's what Freeman had to say.
Oh, Freeman.
I got one of your books for my birthday, and I can't get off it. My parents think I'm too nerdy for my own good, but I think your books are better than words can say.
Whoa.
That was all one sentence.
I hope Freeman has experienced other
good
stories.
For you, Freeman.
Yeah,
I'm gonna peel off these arrows as I go so I don't get confused.
You think Freeman's up to the same shenanigans now?
Up to the same old shit.
Freeman,
same old Freeman. And then something that I thought was interesting, there's a thank you page thanking members of the Bathroom Readers Institute,
of course,
which is like a few, I don't know, a couple dozen or something.
It's like thanking our patrons. Like a lot of people will, yes, yeah, scroll their patrons' names.
Yeah, but I'm not used to seeing it in a book.
I know.
So it's kind of fun.
Yeah.
And then it says at the bottom, special thanks to Mrs. Diamond's fourth grade class. Oh. And then gives all the first names of those kids. What was going on in that dynamite class?
I'll tell you what, Mrs. Diamond sounds like a fun teacher.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter
also,
is
Diamond,
this.
Diamond, D-Y-M-O-N-D.
Oh, weird.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is this. Anything that gets a kid to read,
uh-huh,
is positive. Right?
Yeah, like the Pizza Hut book drive thing.
Too often reading seems like a chore to kids. Even if it's silly and lowbrow, if it gets them to read, wonderful. Who,
yeah,
knows? That door might be opening to Moby
the bathroom.
Dick next.
Yes,
to the
absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
Hopefully not. They're in there.
Yeah. Occupado.
Okay, the first thing in mine that I wanted to comment on is this monster lineup that they have.
Okay.
So they have information about the Mothman, zombies, Bigfoot, and the Jersey Devil. And the stuff about Mothman, Bigfoot, and the Jersey Devil was actually, I mean, pretty accurate to what we've learned.
Okay.
But they say something about zombies here in the Uncle John's Reader that I was surprised by. So it says, zombie, profile, the walking dead, has a blank face and staggering walk and speaks very slowly. Behavior, zombies are corpses raised from the grave by voodoo sorcerers or bokors. They become mindless slaves seeking revenge for the bokor. This is what I did not know about. Only a taste of salt will release the zombie so it can return to its grave.
Oh, I didn't.
Did you know that?
No, but they're combining two different kinds of folklore there.
Mm-hmm.
They're combining, so zombies, I think we covered zombies in an episode. Now,
yeah,
the one that most people think of is The Walking Dead,
mm-hmm,
as that book astutely points out.
Yes.
But where they really come from is from voodoo.
Right.
They were not necessarily corpses. They were people who had been sort of hypnotized,
mm-hmm,
turned into a zombie means that I will do your bidding.
Right.
And that curse
it's like
can
nothing
be lifted.
Going on behind the eyes.
Yeah. So they seem to have combined both.
Yeah.
And I don't think maybe it's not fully like you're one or the other. Maybe there were dead voodoo zombies that,
right,
would return to the grave if they tasted salt.
I guess
that's
so.
I'll take it at face value.
That was an element I'd never heard before.
I've never really dug into voodoo zombies. I would be interested to do that. Watch like White Zombie.
Yeah, I think we just did it a little bit in that episode. And I think I researched it, so I feel like I kind of know. But, I'm sure there's more to know, certainly. So.
I will say I'm mentally on a big zombie kick,
okay,
right now. I have, yeah, not watched a single movie,
mm-hmm,
watched a single show about zombies in months.
Right.
But I can't stop thinking about zombies right now.
Huh. All right. Well, maybe that means that we should do some zombie stuff.
Maybe. Yeah,
yeah.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
I've got something about zombies here.
Oh, great. I'd love to
May
hear
I
it.
May I read it to you?
Please.
Okay. This is from a section. Granted, all my sections are about like nothing,
uh-huh,
you know?
I mean, a lot of them in here are too.
Yeah. So this is about different kinds of trading cards. Not dissimilar from the idea of Garbage Pail Kids, which,
yeah,
we covered on Patreon. The idea of like buying all these different collectible cards that you can trade with your friends about quirky things.
Mm-hmm.
There's evidently a card set from 2007 called Hollywood Zombies.
Okay.
All right. Have you ever wondered what today's stars would look like if they died and came back to life as rotting zombies?
Not so far, but
no,
now I'm kind of interested.
I haven't. This 81 card set from Topps could answer your question in gory detail, but with silly pun-based names.
Mm.
Stars include... All right. So they've all got silly, spooky names.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'll give you the first one. Because you would never guess this. Johnny Depp.
Okay.
In the headlines right now. Becomes Johnny Death.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Yep.
Lame stuff.
Yeah.
A little bit. All right. Martha Stewart. Kristen,
Martha
try to give me a
Stewart.
Give me a zombified You're not going to get it.
I have no idea. I can't think of anything that like rhymes or anything.
Martha Skewered.
Oh my God. No, I never would have gotten that.
Skewered.
Yeah.
All right. Mel Gibson. This might be my favorite one. I probably should have saved it for last because it's the greatest. Mel Gibson.
What is it?
Melt Gibson.
So simple.
The stupidest thing imaginable. Melt Gibson.
Melt Gibson.
We've got Rachel Rott.
Instead of Rachel Ray?
Yes. I don't even know how you guessed that.
I can't think of another famous Rachel with a single syllable last name.
Yeah. Oprah Winfrey becomes Oprah Winfreak.
Okay.
Stupid. Oh my God. All right, I've got a new worst one to end with.
Okay.
We've got Mike Tyson who becomes Mike
Die Soon?
Oh, that's even better than what they've got. Mike Die Son.
Oh, okay.
Die Soon is better than Die Son.
Yeah,
I think.
It's okay.
And then here's the worst one to end on imaginable. Killiam Fatner.
William Shatner?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Killiam Fatner.
There's no need for the Fatner in there if you've already got Killiam.
I agree.
Fat phobic.
We're going to have to look up Hollywood Zombies cards and see if they have any value at all.
I don't know. With names like that, I can't imagine that the market's been kind.
Melt Gibson is maybe one of the funniest.
So stupid.
It's in, right? They're meant to be funny.
Yeah.
Right? So on that level, you could call it a success, but I'm laughing at it.
Right.
So it's funny in a way they didn't anticipate, which is me going, this is
which
terrible.
I would say it's a fail.
Melt Gibson.
Yikes.
Melt. He melted. You seldom hear about somebody melting.
Especially, I mean, zombies aren't known for melting.
No, never. Well, the Tar Man.
Who's the Tar Man?
From Return of the Living Dead. Don't forget about him.
I don't really remember.
Oh, Kristen, when's the last time you saw Return of the Living Dead?
It's been a few years.
Oh, you're making a big mistake. You gotta set up an Alexa alert every
I guess you're right.
2-3 days. Throw that on. It's one of
can't
the,
go too long.
One of the greatest movies of all time. It's fantastic. All right. Back to you.
All right. This is a section called Toy Stories, and it says, here's what happens when toy makers go weird.
What? They could have rewritten that. Could have come up with something better.
I know. So here's
when
one
toy
that
makers go weird.
And also go weird.
Weird.
It's weird to me. I think it'd be better if it was when toy makers go weird. If we have to have ellipses there at all.
You're right.
Okay, so this one is called Secret Agent Doll. The National Security Agency banned Furbies from their headquarters because these fuzzy toys have embedded computer chips that allow them to record and repeat what they hear. Officials were afraid they might remember phrases that are top secret. Why are Furbies at the National Security Agency anyway?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It would seem like a moot point that Furbies aren't allowed in this government building.
Listen, I'll tell you what. I've worked in offices before.
Yeah.
Where somebody is obsessed with, say, ponies.
Okay.
Right?
Yep.
A grown person obsessed with ponies and their desk is covered. Like from top to bottom.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
It's stuffed ponies.
Yes.
Everywhere, it's almost all they talk about. Is there a chance?
That actually happened to me at an office. I actually can't remember what it was now, but somehow at this office I worked in, they got it in their heads that I loved, let's say, unicorns. It could have been. I don't even know if it is.
Yeah.
And I ended up getting all this unicorn stuff. And I was like, where?
You screwed up.
How
and on day
happen?
One,
yeah,
somehow
right.
unicorns came up and you went, oh, I like that. I like those.
Yeah, yeah.
And now that's your thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could there just be a Furby freak at the NSA?
Maybe you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is an answer that makes sense. Okay, let me tell you, before we switch back to you, an abbreviated version from Uncle John about the most haunted house in England.
Oh, great.
They say more than a dozen ghosts wander the halls and grounds of this old mansion. Little Dean Hall in Gloucestershire,
I think.
Gloucestershire.
Okay.
Yeah, that is what it is. Is the oldest continually occupied home in England. Built in the 5th century on a sacred Celtic site, this ancient manor is said to be home to no fewer than 16 ghosts. Visitors find themselves shoved, jerked, and punched by unseen hands. They also report smells of rotting flesh, burned toast, and roses. It's no wonder guests have suffered attacks of dizziness, nausea, and heart palpitations. Where to find the ghosts? Visitors coming up the drive may be greeted by a phantom gardener who resembles one of the previous lords of the manor. The ghost of a servant who murdered his master wanders the halls between his bedroom and the drawing room, wearing a silver collar and carrying a lit candle. A silver collar?
I was about to say, what the hell is a silver collar?
Maybe this is a servant of a different sort.
It makes me think of...
maybe a bit of a subby servant.
Makes me think of Saw 3.
Mm-hmm.
The shotgun collar.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it must mean something that we don't know about. It's probably some clothing thing.
Someone understands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ghosts of Captain Wigmore and Colonel Congrove, both of whom died gruesome deaths, still haunt the dining room. Bloodstains often appear on the wood floors and are quickly scrubbed away, only to return. A ghostly monk walks from the dining room into a secret passage in the library, leading down to the cellar and underground to the nearby grange of Flaxley Abbey.
Hmm.
And in the blue bedroom, swords clash and pistol shots ring out as two brothers duel eternally over a lady love.
Oh, mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of fun. Those are some classy haunts.
Yeah. It's still kind of heavy stuff for a book about kids, right?
Yeah.
A book for kids, excuse me, about ghosts being murdered and gruesome deaths and stuff.
I really do wonder, though, I guess whatever your definition of kids is might be different, right? Because, if you're 6, this is too much.
Right.
If you're 13...
I would think that... I guess when I think of kids, I think, 6 to 10, and then we get into preteen... teen realm.
I know, yeah, but this does strike, I think this is more like young adult than kid.
It's, I hear you, subject matter it would seem that way, but it's still written in such a kooky little kid way or laid out that way that it doesn't really feel that way.
That's interesting, maybe. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah, I don't know. So I've got something that I'm actually genuinely fascinated by from this book. It's a chapter called A Dark and Stormy Rite.
Mm.
W-R-I-T-E. It's about writing. Cool. But I really like this.
Yeah.
So, I say the phrase to you, it was a dark and stormy night. And where does your mind go? What do you think that is? Where do you think it came from, that phrase?
Oh, where did it come from? People telling stories.
Just sort of like us.
Yeah.
This is a mainstay.
Yeah, it's like a classic intro to telling a story.
You might sit around the campfire. Right. Somebody might just say that. It sets the scene instantly.
Right.
In however many words, a handful of words. It was a dark and stormy night.
Mm-hmm.
Like 7 or 8 words. Bam. You're in the mindset for something spooky.
Yeah, you're ready.
Got it. It turns out that this is almost like a literary mockery.
Oh.
It's a joke. It's something that somebody was made fun of for 200 years.
Uh-huh.
That's maybe a little long. Anyway, so it is written by, initially believed to have been written by, Edward Bulwer Lytton in 1830. It's how he started his novel, Paul Clifford. This guy was a contemporary of Charles Dickens.
Okay.
He was believed by many at the time, even. He said, his writing might be even better than Charles Dickens. But this is the opening sentence of his 1830 novel, Paul Clifford. And everybody, it seems at the time, instantly pounced and was like, this sucks. This guy sucks. This is stupid and embarrassing. And as a result of the phrase, it was a dark and stormy night, a shortened version of the full sentence.
Uh-huh.
You'll see the full sentence is a big mouthful. But people started using it was a dark and stormy night.
They're like, look, I'm a hack.
Yeah, I'm a hack. This is bad writing. Right? Because it is on the nose. None of those things are unpacked. You're not saying, you could say the shadows crept, the moon was behind the clouds. But no, you say it was dark.
It's economical.
So you're right about that. So
I can't fault them for that.
Here's the full sentence. It was a dark and stormy night. The rain fell in torrents, except at occasional intervals where it was checked by a violent gust of wind which swept up the streets. For it is in London that our scene lies, rattling along the housetops and fiercely agitating the scanty flame of the lamps that struggled against the darkness.
I mean, that sounds pretty cool.
It's a big dramatic phrase, maybe a bit lofty, maybe up its own butt.
I know. Honestly, it stops being economical almost immediately. Then it gets super wordy.
100%. But weirdly, everybody pounced on this and it almost became like a meme.
Weird.
Like an 1830s meme of people just writing it in letters and
dark
stuff.
And stormy night.
Yeah, and just making fun of poor Edward Bulwer Lytton. So much so that it became his name. There was a contest.
Uh-huh.
The Bulwer Lytton Fiction Contest.
To see who can suck the most? It was like the Razzies?
Who can write the shittiest opening sentence?
Look, I know all things are relative and everything. So, you know, when people are like, oh, what did people do back then? They didn't have all this technology.
Right.
Like, well, they found their own stuff to do. This makes me think that they didn't have anything to do.
100%.
Because
that sentence
is perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with it. Well, the dark and stormy night part of it.
Right.
That's a perfectly fine way to write. Yeah. And yet they're like, oh, yeah, we got something. Oh, let's start the Bulwer contest for people who suck.
This dude blows.
Yeah.
Eat it, Bulwer.
Yeah.
Now you've been dead for 100+ years and we're still ragging on you.
But I feel he's finally gotten his, I guess, because now it's just a phrase.
It's just part of our lexicon.
Yeah.
It is everywhere. It is how every little kid starts a story. I would argue that the staying power of it might make it one of the best sentence fragments, phrases, whatever you want to call it, of all time.
I agree. He's a legend.
He's a legend.
Nobody talks about Charles Dickens anymore.
No, I've never even heard of him.
Yeah.
Chris, I would die before I'd read a book. Anyway, this Uncle John's that I'm holding was published in 2012. So they've got the winner of the 2011 Bulwer Lytton Fiction Contest.
Oh, excellent.
For worst sentence of all.
for person who sucks the most.
The winner was Sue Fondry of Oshkosh, Wisconsin. And here's the sentence. Cheryl's mind turned like the vanes of a wind-powered turbine, chopping her sparrow-like thoughts into bloody pieces that fell onto a growing pile of forgotten memories.
Well, they did a great job, because that sentence is horseshit.
way to go. I write.
Yeah.
I'm something of a writer.
Yep.
I can think of nothing that is maybe more useless and negative and perhaps pretentious than a bad writing
totally,
contest.
That sucks.
And the whole thing is making fun of some guy who just like, oh, he just wrote a book.
Right.
He just wanted to write a book.
Right.
So other quick facts about this guy, because there are other contributions he's made to the English language. He is the dude that coined the phrases, the pursuit of the almighty dollar, the great unwashed, and he is the person who wrote the pen is mightier than the sword.
This guy's killing it. I don't know what everybody's problem was.
And even stranger, for all of the like negative association he got for using It Was a Dark and Stormy Night, I'm pulling the rug out from under your feet. It seems he is not the person who came up with that. Washington Irving, 21 years earlier, used the same phrase in his book, The History of New York. It was a dark and stormy night when the good Antony arrived at the creek, sagely denominated Harlem River, which separates the island of blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
The point is, Washington Irving used it, and in the modern day, people think that this other guy, Edward Bulwer Lytton, might have been making fun of him.
What is wrong with everybody? That is a completely normal way to describe a night.
It was a dark and stormy night.
And they're like, oh, you're such a loser.
They thought it was hack work, I guess. They thought that it was tacky and bad.
Little did
they know that by making fun of it, they may have actually boosted it to such a degree that it's now what everybody goes to. Even if you just say to somebody, like, tell me a scary story.
Yeah, it was a dark and stormy night is what even like little kids say. And you're like, how do you know that?
It's just in it's like collective memory.
Yep.
We just have it now. So Edward Bulwer Lytton wins, except in the name category.
Of course. I hope he's getting the last laugh wherever he is.
He's, below. He's retired to Florida. Anyway, I just like that. Oh, that was kind of neat.
Yeah, it's awesome. All right, well, before we move on, we'd better talk about something pretty darn important.
You know what? I guess we should.
Yeah.
All right. Let's talk about our sponsor. don't laugh at me. Let's talk about our sponsor, Kristen, NordVPN.
That's right. Well, I don't want to say which one, but I got an alert the other day about a security breach in a site that I use.
A security breach? Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God. It happens all the time. Wait, Kristen, was your valuable personal data in danger?
Of course not, you fool. NordVPN's dark web monitor notified me that my personal information was compromised, and I protected my accounts right away.
The little radio play that you've just heard is based on a true story, everybody. It happens all the time. And it's true. Kristen and I use NordVPN, and we're able to make sure that no one tracks our usage. Not you, not anyone. We're able to lean on NordVPN's included tools to make sure that we are safe online.
That's right. And right now, NordVPN is offering a discount to new users who visit nordvpn.com/gttupod. Promo code GTTU. If you change your mind, you'll be protected by their 30-day money-back guarantee.
Real quick, yeah. Little sidebar away from our scripted shenanigans. Because I've got it now, I find myself turning to it frequently.
Ah, excellent.
Frequently. I'll find myself starting to look something up or maybe want to like watch a movie or a show. Mm-hmm. And I'll be like, oh, you know what? Why don't I flip on, do a quick connect on NordVPN.
Yeah.
Connect from somewhere in the Midwest. Who knows?
Right.
Maybe I'll connect from Nova Scotia.
Why not?
Why not?
You
maybe,
can.
Maybe the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh.
Anyway, you can connect through all their centers and then it just feels like you're connecting to everything more securely. I'm telling you. It's like a little security blanket.
Yeah.
So get that discount, get a free month, and get free threat protection today. You'll be protected from threats. Who doesn't want to be protected from threats?
No one.
That's nordvpn.com/gttupod. Promo code GTTU. Check the show notes for a link and ghost yourself.
Get it on.
Is that your new phrase?
Yeah.
I like it, I guess.
Is that our last ad with them?
Get it on.
I guess better late than never.
For now.
They
got to sign back up. I assume that NordVPN is going to want to re-up immediately.
Now that they've heard my catchphrase.
Get it on.
Get it on.
Ghost yourself. Get it on. You can have more of that.
Yeah.
Buy a package.
It's all yours, Nord.
Sure. Hey, Nord. You listen to Nord?
It's probably a guy, right?
Yeah.
It's NordVPN.
Yeah.
It's the dude.
That's right. Nord the fifth.
All right.
Peen. Anyway.
Speaking of peens,
yeah,
let's get into my next subject from the strange and scary freaky facts about peculiar people for children.
Peens?
This is weird underwear.
Oh, God. Okay.
Boxers, briefs, or these? It
what?
Says.
Or these.
Inflatable underpants. Katsuo Katagoru of Tokyo, Japan, was so afraid of drowning that he invented something to protect himself in case of emergency. Inflatable underpants. Unfortunately, his underwear accidentally inflated while he was on the subway.
What?
Instantly expanding to 30 times their normal size.
30 times?
And nearly suffocating his seatmates.
Wait a minute. This is way too big, right? Are you sure that he didn't inflate them himself?
I don't know if you could inflate them to 30 times their normal size.
30 times. That's a norm. I'm picturing from the outside of the subway car just going.
Yes.
And pushing against the window.
Like an airbag all of a sudden went off.
Yes.
So luckily some quick thinking passengers burst his bubble, saving the day by stabbing the undies with pens and pencils.
My undies!
No! My life's work! Because he invented this, remember?
Right, yes. I'm ruined! Puncturing it with pens and pencils, plural, means that like multiple people on the subway. Together, gang, as one.
We gotta get out of here.
Some old man with an unsharpened pencil.
Yeah. Some dumbass using the eraser side.
My life's work.
It's so funny.
All right, here's a section I've got called Weird Bequests.
Mm-hmm.
You can't take it with you, so you might as well have a little fun when you leave it behind. Skullduggery, this one's called.
Ah, cool.
In 1955, an Argentine man named Juan Potomachi bequeathed 200,000 pesos, about $43,000, to the Teatro Dramatico Theater in Buenos Aires. The catch? His skull got to play Yorick. The skull Hamlet holds up for his soliloquy in Act 5 of course, Hamlet.
That's awesome.
A year later, Potomachi's skull co-starred in a production of Hamlet. I Love that.
That's awesome.
It never occurred to me that might be an option.
Yeah.
Never occurred to me.
I guess people feel too bad to say no to things like that.
But I just think it's amazing. Right? The idea that, like, beyond your death, you can still be part of performance or the arts or something that you care about.
Right.
I'm not even kidding. I want my skull to be part of, like, a horror set.
Okay.
Like some future.
I'll arrange it.
Okay.
Of course, it's been foretold that some future, you will die at my hand.
Yes. Some future podcasters with their own little podcast set in a basement. They've got shelves behind them or something. I want a skull on that set to be my skull.
Yeah. I don't see why not.
I think that is so cool.
Yeah.
I think that's so awesome. The idea of just like being part of something forever. Uh-huh.
You live on.
Yeah.
Well, you're only part of that thing if you believe that the flesh is important, the physical body.
Well, I don't. But
because you can be part of that as a ghostie forever.
Yeah, but I don't believe in the afterlife.
Right. So you're at an impasse.
No, because my skull is still a tangible thing that exists.
Yes.
I won't know that I'm part of it. Right?
True.
But the idea of me, Will Rogers, alive today is saying, what if my skull is part of, like, what if it's in a movie? What if it's on a show?
Yeah.
Even 100 years in the future, whatever. It's just like, that is so fascinating. The idea that I could still be in play. You know?
Well, Matthew in the chat, because we record our episodes live every week on youtube.com/GTTUpod on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And there's a chat going of people watching. Matthew just had a good suggestion. He said, they said, Will's skull will be added to the Pirates of the Caribbean ride.
People do that kind of thing a lot where they like spread somebody's ashes.
Right. But this is different. Because there are skulls all over the place in that ride. So this is much more of an organic fit.
I do love the idea. I'm very pro the idea of like, I'll donate my body to science. Right. Like you're not using that body anymore. You know, you're somewhere else. You don't exist.
Right.
But somebody might be able to learn something important or test something, you know. I love the idea of like, yeah, that Disney ride is sitting there and doesn't change. You know? I mean, it has changed, but very seldom.
Right.
The idea that like, put it in a weird corner, who cares?
Yeah, they're not going to know.
A skull in there is my skull.
Yeah.
That is so cool to me. I love that idea. Can I will my skull to the arts?
I guess so. I mean, this guy kind of did that, who you just read about in the Johns Reader, so... Yeah. I suppose so.
Oh, I would totally do that.
Yeah, do it then.
Here's a weird one. Harold West of London, England, died in 1972, terrified of vampires to the end. In his will, he instructed his doctor, quote, to drive a steel stake through my heart to make sure that I am properly dead. There has been no word on whether or not that was carried out.
I mean, I guess you can ask for whatever you want. It's really just up to other people to honor your wishes.
And that's the concerning part. You can ask for whatever the hell you'd like.
Right. But you're not going to be around to make sure that it's enforced.
People got to see it through.
Yeah.
You need like-minded...
You have to ask a trusted person.
Yes. You need like-minded people to actually carry out your bizarre wish of having your body brutalized.
Right. Exactly.
Beyond the grave needlessly.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to you.
Well, speaking of beyond the grave, let's talk about King Tut's curse.
Please.
As told to the Uncle John's reader. Who believes in curses? We do.
Oh.
On November 26th, 1922, a team led by a British archaeologist named Harry Hare, Howard Carter, entered the ancient Egyptian tomb of King Tutankhamun. Within 7 years of that date, 11 of the 13 Europeans who were present when the tomb was opened were dead. Some believe a fungus found growing on the tomb's walls killed the explorers. Others believe the tomb was cursed. What do you think? The facts! On the day King Tut's tomb was opened, a vulture circled overhead. The archaeologists thought this was particularly strange. Why? Because according to legend, the tomb was guarded by Nekbet, the vulture goddess.
Oh.
Her curse was printed above the door. That is kind of awesome.
That's pretty cool.
3 months later, Lord Carnarvon, who had financed the expedition, was the first to go. He died crying, "There's a bird scratching my face!" At the exact moment he passed away, the lights went out in Cairo, and his dog at home in England howled in anguish. And,
what?
And then dropped dead.
The dog did?
Yeah.
How does anyone know it was the exact same time?
I don't know. Maybe, like, he was a fancy person, Lord Carnarvon, so maybe there was, like, a servant there who... I don't know.
They didn't know anything back then.
I don't know.
Well, so were they.
Yeah.
I don't expect you to answer for it.
I don't know.
Nobody knows anything.
But maybe they did, is what I'm saying. Maybe somebody was home with the dog, and they were like, oh my god, the clock struck 8, and then all of a sudden Fido keeled over, and they're like, that's so strange. My pocket watch said
the
8,
strike of
and
8.
Then Lord Carnarvon started clawing at his face.
All right, fine. Sure.
Who knows? Maybe. And they would probably know when the lights went out in Cairo.
Yeah, true. We should look into King Tut.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
All of this stuff is just very, like, racist and xenophobic.
Yeah.
You know, just like being like, absolutely. Oh, really? They buried people that they cared about and wanted them not to be disturbed?
Yeah, let's go give it a look. And then when we give it a look, let's assume that they are going to make bad things happen to us because they have some sort of mystical powers that they use for ill will.
Let's deliberately misunderstand their messages.
Yeah.
And then weave entertainment and fear-mongering out of it to promote our museums.
It's exactly that. So that same year, Richard Bethell, Howard Carter's secretary, died of heart failure. Oh. That seems like a little bit of a stretch. I'm sorry to hear it, but it's less direct than a person who's on site dying. Your secretary died the same year?
There was a, you know, the Doors, the band The Doors?
Yeah.
I think they were subject to, like, what a lot of things happen, where it's like maybe a couple members died or something. And so people were like, the curse of The Doors. This person has now died. It was really only like a few years ago, another one died, and Norm MacDonald had a joke. He was like, this guy from The Doors has passed away.
He that was like, curse, 85.
The curse of The Doors continues. It's like, how long are we going to make, you know, a meal out of this?
Right. Like, how long has to, there be between incidents to decide that we are just resetting the clock?
Right.
This is now just something that happens in normal life.
This is still part of the curse.
Right.
Yeah.
A short time later, Arthur Mace, one of the archaeologists in the group who opened the tomb, fell into a coma.
Yeah.
He died in 1923. Hugh Evelyn White, another archaeologist with the expedition, hung himself in 1924. He left a note that read, "I have succumbed to a curse which forces me to disappear."
Oh, God.
So it's curse related.
Well, that's horrifying,
but definitely though. Just, you know, mental illness.
Yeah, different kind of horror. Yeah.
The year the tomb was opened, a worker stole a piece of King Tut's jewelry. A relative of the thief returned it to the authorities 83 years later. Why? The curse. From the time the relative received the jewel, 4 untimely deaths had struck her family.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean...
So that's King Tut's curse as told in a bathroom reader.
Yeah. I mean, one of the most trustworthy sources, I would argue.
Right.
I've got... I thought this was kind of neat. And who knows if this is even accurate.
Yeah.
The second that something is printed, especially printed on paper.
It seems like it has more veracity to it.
Well, there's that, but also it is like immediately outdated.
That's true. Yes.
So as of whenever this book was printed, 2012,
mm-hmm.
This is the person who is behind the behind bars in jail the longest ever.
Okay.
Paul Geidel. The crime. On July 26, 1911... Paul Geidel, then 17, broke into the New York City hotel room of 73-year-old William H. Jackson. Geidel, who had been living on his own since the age of 14, had worked in the hotel as a bellhop, but had recently been fired. Rumor had it that Jackson, a retired Wall Street broker, kept a lot of cash in his room. Mm. Geidel jumped the older man while he slept and suffocated him, possibly unintentionally, with a chloroform-soaked rag. It turned out the rumor was wrong about the cash. Geidel fled the hotel with just $7.
Oh, my God.
He was arrested 15 hours later, the time he served in jail. Geidel received a prison sentence of 20 years to life, but for reasons that remain a mystery, when he became eligible for parole in 1931, and then every 10 years after that, his parole was denied, even though he was a model prisoner. Finally, in 1974, the press got word of the man who'd been in prison for more than 60 years, and Geidel was finally granted parole. Only problem? He didn't want to go. He was finally convinced to leave in 1980, at the age of 86.
Oh my god!
He had spent 68 years, 8 months, and 2 days behind bars.
How do you do on the outside?
It remains the longest time served in the U.S., in U.S. prison history. Geidel died in a nursing home 7 years later.
Oh my god! He didn't want to leave, like Red from the Shawshank Redemption. Yes.
Well, at a certain point...
Yes, it's your reality.
He was 17 years old when he went in.
Yep.
When I think of myself at 17,
mm-hmm.
I was ill-prepared for everything.
Absolutely.
Everything.
Yes.
Then you spend 68 years in jail, even though it's jail.
But it becomes your reality. And you it's your reality. You find ways to live, I'm sure.
This
you know?
Is it. Yes.
It's almost cruel to make him leave yes. when he's like in his 80s.
Yes.
What are you supposed to do out in the world with like currency?
Let me stay.
Well, they have currency. That's not
without
true.
Currency. What?
I don't know.
You don't use money anymore? I've still got the $7.
Yeah.
What a crazy.
But the world has to be extremely different.
Oh my God. Let's see. Wait, when did he go in? 1911.
And then he got out.
And he was let out in 1980.
Oh my
what a
god.
Whiplash experience.
Holy crap.
He comes out and people are breakdancing and beatboxing. He gets one look at Jason Voorhees.
Yeah.
He starts clutching his chest. Kristen, it's a different world.
It's terrible.
It's terrible.
This poor guy.
It's horrible and injustice.
It truly is. Okay, let's hear
and
a
you're
little
laughing.
Story.
Look at you. Smirk on your face, laughing at somebody's misery.
Come on.
Enjoying it.
You picked it out to talk about it.
It's fascinating.
You loved it.
I did. Every minute.
Okay, here's a little story about the grave of Edgar Allan Poe.
Oh, cool.
It's titled Nevermore in the book.
Well, of course.
Every year on the 19th of January, a mysterious man sneaks into a locked graveyard in Baltimore, Maryland, and places 3 roses and a half-empty bottle of cognac on Edgar Allan Poe's grave. Poe, author of dark poems and stories like The Raven and The Telltale Heart, died in 1849. Jeff Jerome, great name.
That is a great name.
Curator of the Poe House and Museum, says the man first appeared in 1949. In 1993, the mysterious mourner, who always wore a scarf and black hat, left a note that read, "The torch will be passed." What? In 1999, the 51st year, a new mourner appeared. This one followed the same ritual as the previous mystery man, placing the roses and the cognac bottle on Poe's grave. He put his hand on top of the tombstone and bowed his head for 5 minutes, and then he disappeared into the fog. What?
That's bizarre.
Yeah, that's
incredibly
awesome.
Incredibly bizarre. But also very sweet.
It's cool.
It is.
It makes me think that there's some sort of like secret society of Poe lovers.
Right.
Who, you know, decided that, like you said, the torch would be passed, and they arranged for it to be, and for some reason, it took 6 years
right.
for the new person to show up, but somebody showed up.
But that is a good thing. Now, listen, Edgar Allan Poe obviously has remained incredibly, like, famous and well-known, and his work is still shared, and it's beloved, but the idea that, like, when you die, you're at risk to just be forgotten,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's kind of cool.
That
somebody goes in there and
I think it's awesome.
Leave some sort of an offering.
Have you been to the Poe House Museum?
No.
I have. It's
no,
pretty
I
cool.
No, I haven't. Really?
Yeah.
I would absolutely go. I like Baltimore.
Yeah.
I've gone down there a bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we covered his death.
Yes.
Right? Because it was incredibly mysterious.
Yes.
He was sort of just like found.
He was wearing like clothes that weren't his.
Yeah.
And yeah, he was like found in the street.
He like didn't have ID,
mm-hmm.
or something like that.
And right? It turned out, I think most people have landed on, I can't remember what the name for it was, but there was some sort of thing where like criminals who work for politicians or something would like accost people in the street and make them vote repeatedly and put them in different clothes so that they could fool the poll people.
That is so
and
insane.
It seemed like Edgar Allan Poe got caught up in that and then was killed somehow.
That is so
I know.
Strange. Read another because
okay.
I took notes on somewhere in here. There are life hacks about the human body,
uh-huh.
but I failed to write down the
wash
page
it.
Yeah, you should wash it.
Wipe. probably in Uncle John's. that's a good life
hack. That is some good advice from Uncle John.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about some spooky spots.
Yeah.
Want to see a ghost?
Yes.
Visit scary old England. There are plenty of ghosts for everyone.
Okay.
All right, this is about the Borley Rectory in Essex. According to local legend, in the 17th century, a woman named Marie Lair was strangled by her husband and buried in the cellar of a monastery. 200 years later, Reverend Henry Bull unknowingly built Borley Rectory on the site where the monastery once stood. Marie Lair soon made her presence known. She often appeared at Reverend Bull's window, staring at him with vacant eyes. Bull was so upset that he bricked up the window, but the ghostly legend grew.
I love the idea of staring with vacant eyes, just sort of like looking
through you.
Yeah.
In 1923, new owners called in a psychic investigator who witnessed vases flying into walls, keys leaping from their keyholes, and messages being tapped out on a mirror. When the Reverend Lionel Foister, also a good name, I like Jerome Jeff better, but still.
Of course. Jerome Jeff sounds like a boyfriend of Elaine's.
Yes, I thought the exact same thing. Moved into the rectory, messages began to appear on the walls asking Foister's wife, Marianne, to please get help. In 1939, there's a little picture, by the way, of this on the walls of just scrawling that says, Marianne, please get help. And then it looks like Marianne wrote back, I cannot understand, tell me more. And it says Marianne and more scribbles where I can see the word help. And then Marianne wrote, I still cannot understand. Please tell me more. Hmm. I imagine this went on for a while.
A good bit.
Yeah. In 1939, a mysterious fire destroyed the house. Some local residents claimed to have seen a nun at an upper window peering out over the flames.
Loving the flames. A nun that loves flames.
Ah, just basking.
It's Valak.
Yeah. Valak. Oh, no. From The Conjuring 2.
Oh, that was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It seems like you found your thing, so you can go ahead.
I did. Yeah. Odd body tips and tricks. Some strange tips sent in by readers who swear they work.
Okay.
So here's some life hacks about things
you
can do with your body that you didn't know that you could do, which is weird, right?
Yeah.
All right. About to sneeze? Push the tip of your tongue upward against the roof of your mouth where the hard palate ends and the soft palate begins.
Huh. Okay. I'll have to give that a try.
I know. I want to try that.
These. Yeah.
Chopping an onion? Avoid tears by lighting a candle. The heat will attract and burn the sulfide fumes.
It doesn't really work.
I've got a tip.
Oh, okay.
I hate onions.
I know you do.
So much. I don't know who decided that we should be eating these things.
Well, I do. The first man to eat an onion.
Kristen, you got me.
Got it?
You got me
got
good.
It. If you listen to our Easter episode from this year, we listened to a little ditty from the Easter Bunny is Coming to Town about people who did things first, and the first man to eat an onion is there.
You peeled the whole damn thing apart until it was just gone.
That's right.
That's on our Patreon, patreon.com/GTTUpod. Speaking of which, this past week is maybe one of my favorite episodes that we have ever done.
Mm-hmm.
Ever done. I'm not exaggerating. I love it. Kristen and I played the game PT, better known as a canceled teaser for what would have been a reboot of Silent Hill.
Mm-hmm.
Not only that, Kristen played it.
Yeah. Oh boy, usually when we do video game stuff, Will plays and I observe and, you know, whatever. And I'm not much of a video game person and I played and it scared the absolute hell out of me.
It was so much fun. I would say that you were really good at it. It was a two-thumb game. You had to move with one thumb, move the camera with the other.
I was working those thumbs pretty well.
I thought you did great.
Thank you.
But this game is all atmosphere. It is so spooky. It has some of the greatest ideas I've ever seen in a game, ever seen in any piece of horror media, maybe.
Yeah.
And in it, Kristen, at one moment, covered her face, which means she dropped the controller and just clattered to the ground. She was so scared.
It really scared the absolute hell out of me.
It is so much fun. It is so good. We looked at some like unused other stuff that maybe only a few people have seen of the game, an unused concept trailer for what it might have been in the future. Mm-hmm. I loved it so much.
Yeah.
Go check it out. It is on the Netherworld Dispatch feed, which you can only get by signing up to our Patreon.
Mm-hmm.
Different tiers get different amounts of episodes. If you join the Demon tier, that's the highest, you get a new episode every single Monday.
Yeah.
What's your life been missing? What's the problem? You need more Guide to the Unknown.
We'll fix it, whatever the problem is.
Go check it out.
With more episodes.
This coming Monday, we're continuing Fatal Frame. Guess what? We already recorded it. Guess what? It was spooky.
Yeah.
It was very fun.
It's pretty scary.
So come back on Monday as well.
Yes.
A lot of good stuff. Patreon.com/GTTUpod.
Yes. Thank you to our existing patrons.
Now here's my onion help.
Okay.
It's a great segue back into good material. Now here's some onion help.
Great.
First of all, when you peel the onion, rinse it.
Why are you doing this? I'm surprised that you're even interacting with onions.
I can cook.
Yeah, I know, but like you hate onions so much. I'm surprised you don't ask if Allie can take that part.
No, if I'm cooking, which let's face it, it's not as frequent as it probably should be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to dole out some tasks that I don't like. You're
going to shirk that responsibility.
No, I'll take the whole thing on.
Great.
So
great.
If you're working with onions out there, rinse them in water.
Okay.
Reason being, the acids in the onions or whatever the hell is singeing your face and making you cry, it's interacting with the moisture on your eye.
Oh.
So rinse it. That'll dissipate some of it.
Ah.
Next tip, chew something. They say gum. It can be literally anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it does appear to work for me.
Okay.
Because I'm telling you, onions, for some reason, like I will, my face will freak out.
Oh,
I'll be crying. It stings. I hate it.
I hate it too. I've only tried the candle thing. I don't think I've ever tried another method other than going like this kind of
water and chewing.
All right. I'll give it a shot.
Chewing. And even when you cut the onion again, feel free to toss that sucker under the water for another second.
I might.
Yeah. I really hate these things.
That's a good idea.
Whoever figured out we can eat them, and they don't even taste good.
Nah, I disagree with that.
Oh,
I love
they
onions.
Suck. If they're cooked and they're in something, I can live with it.
Right.
A raw onion. I would
elevates a dish.
I'd rather eat nothing than eat a raw onion. I'll tell you that right now. All right. Keep an injection from hurting by pressing on the spot where you're about to get the needle. By overloading the nerve endings in that area, you deaden the pain.
Hmm. Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Stop the gag reflex by clenching your thumb in your fist.
Okay.
I could literally try this right now.
What?
And
why?
It might make a good clip.
Why?
But I won't.
Wait, what do you mean? You're going to make yourself gag?
I mean, I could.
Really?
Right? Why not?
I don't know. How are you going to do that?
The classic little kid thing. You just stick your finger down your throat.
Oh, I guess so.
You know?
Yeah.
Should I try it?
If you want
like
to. I'm not going to make you. It's okay.
Debasing myself.
It's okay.
For science.
I don't want you to do that. It'll be uncomfortable.
I think I'll skip it.
Yeah.
Feel free to DM me.
DM you to ask you to gag yourself?
While clenching my thumb.
I'm going to say I hope that goes into filtered messages.
Yeah, they all do. I miss a lot of them. I respond to a bunch of people who sent me messages.
Yeah.
And some of them had been sent like 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I'm not even kidding. I had no idea. I don't know.
No, I believe, especially with all the filters and all of that, sometimes that happens.
Who knows? I don't know nothing.
Yeah.
All right. Here's the last one. Leg fall asleep. This is good for the bathroom. Change the position of your hip to adjust the blood flow to your lower body. End pins and needles in your hands by shaking your head. That loosens the pressure on nerves in your neck.
Oh, that's cool.
There you go.
Huh. I won't remember any of these.
Neither will I. No.
It sounds neat.
I don't remember half of what we talk about on the show.
Me neither. You know, I got to tell you, a handful of people referenced me last week in the show, which was the episode about The Conjuring 2. Using a voice like Bill Wilkins and talking about tampons.
Yes.
And I don't know what that is.
I remember that.
What is it?
Where does your tampon go?
But why would I say that?
Because I said that the Enfield poltergeist, according to reports, was obsessed with menstruation.
That's right. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I remember now. And I was like, oh, that poor girl was like too uncomfortable to talk about menstruating just like as herself.
Exactly.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, I literally, truly no recollection.
Oh, it happens all the time.
I had absolutely no idea. I know it wasn't a surprise, but I haven't had many people call it the exact same moment in a while. And I just had no idea what was going on. All right. So I think this is going to take us on home. This is the story of a ghost hunter. Who are you going to call? Nancy, of course.
Yeah.
In the 1970s, Professor Nancy Acuff was driving home from her job at East Tennessee University when she hit what she later called a time warp.
Oh.
Suddenly, she was transported in time back to the 1800s. Her home was gone, and in its place stood a log cabin. She watched a man on horseback gallop up to the cabin door and yell for someone to come out. When a young boy appeared, the rider whirled around and galloped back down the road. Then, just as suddenly, everything changed back to the 1970s. When a similar incident happened a year later, Acuff did some investigating and concluded that the man was her home's previous owner, Jacob Storm, the first mayor of Blountville, Tennessee.
What?
Word of Professor Acuff's ghost hunting spread, and soon she was getting calls from people with haunted homes of their own. Acuff believes there is a difference between spirits and ghosts. Ghosts always do the same thing at the same location, but spirits are generally the souls of dead relatives who have some message or warning that they want to impart. And Professor Acuff is there to receive it.
Well, wait,
or a cuff? I don't know.
Didn't she say that she went back in time and saw a log cabin?
Yes!
Does she live in a log cabin today?
I don't know.
Because
said her home was gone, and in its place stood a log cabin.
But then she says the guy she saw on a horse by the log cabin must have been the previous owner of her home. So does she live in a log cabin?
She could, because when we were house hunting, we saw a log cabin.
Really?
And I wanted it, but it was like really weirdly shaped or something. I don't remember.
Yeah, somebody built it out of Lincoln Logs.
It looked like it was built out of Lincoln Logs, and then it had like bright yellow accents. It was very weird looking, but I was kind of into it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Where?
In New Jersey somewhere. I don't know.
Okay.
In the air. Well, in the
in
area
the state.
We were only looking in the, you know, area. I don't know what town it was.
All
but
right, fair enough. Yeah.
Yeah. She could live in a log cabin house, I guess.
I guess,
that's weird.
It's just weird.
Puzzling.
Doesn't that seem like a million billion years ago, though?
Yes.
Right?
But maybe it's not. I mean, she said that she was transported back in time to the 1800s. That's not so far away when
this
you live
in
the 1970s.
In the 1970s. Fair enough. This house is 102 years old.
Right.
So, sure. In the 1970s, if you had a house that was 100 years old, it's the 1800s. Maybe it was a log cabin, and then it's been expanded on, or it was raised and a new house was built there, but
he
owned the plot of land. All right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking
it's something like that.
Still seems weird.
But so this professor became a ghost hunter because she was rocketed back in time and then rocketed back forward.
I also like that they gloss over the, like, when a similar incident happened. Like, don't talk about that.
What is that? I mean, I wonder if it was a space issue where it was like, we have a page for this.
Yeah, exactly. Because otherwise, even if it was the exact same thing she experienced, it's important to be like, it happened again. Not just
going back in time,
but the whole thing. Incredible. This time she, you know, if at first she seemed like she doubted what she had experienced, this time she could deny it no further.
It was confirmed.
For it had happened a second time, thereby ingraining itself in her memory. But no, they're just like, and then it happened again, and so ipso facto, moving
on. She thinks ghosts and spirits are different.
Yada, yada, yada. She married a funky phantom.
Yeah.
I wonder if we put ourselves out there as saying we... people whose houses are haunted get in touch with us and we'll come investigate it or look into it or talk, do a show, feel it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Would we start getting requests from people?
I don't know.
Because,
why don't we put that out?
Yeah. Especially
this isn't a guarantee that we'll do it.
No.
But you know what?
But it'd be very helpful if you're in New Jersey, the tri-state area.
Oh, God, yeah.
Right?
Yes.
If you're... live in a haunted house in the tri-state area, feel free to get in touch.
If you want us to come to your house.
I'd be very curious
to people who aren't even amateur ghost hunters. That would be too generous a phrase.
Yeah, we'll just
kind of look around.
What if we can turn it into money?
Just sort of poking around.
We'll send you our day rates.
That'd be great.
That'd be nice.
Yeah.
That'd be fantastic. If you're rich and you're haunted.
Yeah. Oh, ideal. Talk to us.
That's the best of the best.
It would be absolutely the dream.
We'll come with our Uncle John's under our arms.
Instead of a Bible.
Yes. Lead me to the room.
Yeah. Show me. I'll wear a hat, like a priest coming in from outside.
Okay.
An exorcist or something.
Sure.
That's all we got.
What can I do?
You'll have the Uncle John's.
Oh, I'll wait dramatically outside carrying a briefcase and a trench coat and that hat so that before you even know I'm there, you just glance out the window and I'm standing there like the Exorcist.
Yeah.
Right?
That's perfect.
It's pretty good.
I don't see why not. Pretty
good. Imagine that.
Well, guys, until next time, think of opportunities for us to come out to haunted houses, do just about nothing.
Oh, yeah.
And somehow get paid for that.
Almost nothing.
Right.
Really more do a show and go, I wonder if we'll feel something.
Yeah.
Nope.
All right.
Anyway.
Here we trudge home.
Let's talk about Scream.
Yeah. That's right. We hope you enjoyed the show. As Will already explained, please go to patreon.com/GTTUpod if you'd like to help support the show. It means truly the world.
It does.
And there are a lot of really cool things over there that you can enjoy in return.
Yes. Yeah. Thank you so much. There's so much to check out there.
Mm-hmm.
55 plus episodes.
Yeah.
Of stuff over there, little exclusive fun things that you might find, video games, movie stuff, checking out music videos. There's just a ton.
Yeah.
And also, we should say this too, our entire catalog of episodes here. This is episode 237.
I know.
Of Guide to the Unknown. Room 237.
It's our room 237.
It is. Don't
famously
go in.
My favorite candle.
The room you should not go in.
Yeah, that's room 237. The bathroom.
The bathroom.
Yeah.
But it's just incredible how long we've been able to go because people do seem to enjoy this show.
Yes.
So if wild. You're one of those people, consider checking out our back catalog of episodes. We've covered the true stories behind horror movies, tons of folklore, creatures, monsters, cryptids, hauntings, ghosts, urban legends, rumors.
Yeah.
Dive in. It is so much fun. Everything that we've ever done lives on GTTUpod.com. Consider giving this show a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Rate us on Spotify.
Yep.
We've got a page on this website called Pod Chaser. This is where a lot of podcasts are like, it's like an IMDb for podcasts, basically. Mm-hmm. So you can go there, you can follow Kristen, say, and see every show where Kristen has appeared. She's appeared on many.
Mm-hmm.
But you can review us there as well. So go check that out. It's podchaser.com/GTTUpod. We are at GTTUpod on all social media. Consider following. We've been doing a lot of fun stuff, a lot of fun little videos and TikToks and clips from the show, like little micro things. I was scrolling back through our TikTok.
Yeah.
I stopped like aggressively doing TikTok stuff.
Yeah.
But then I got Guide to the Unknown recommended on my TikTok, and I just started scrolling through it. And they're so short that it was just so much fun to keep scrolling and get more quick bite Guide to the Unknown things that I was like, I'm enjoying this. I think I want to make more again.
Good.
So maybe I will.
By all means.
But Kristen just live tweeted watching Teaching Mrs. Tingle.
I did. I sure did.
The Guide to the Unknown Twitter. Yep. Like, there's a whole universe of stuff.
Yeah.
Join us. Become part of our multiverse.
Yes, please.
All right, everybody. You can also follow us individually online, as I sort of mentioned there.
That's right. I'm at Chillin' Kristen.
I am at The Myth Traveler. So we will be back next week for more weird, scary stuff. But until that time comes, we must travel.
Back to the Netherworld. Go we. Back to the John, yeah.
Got some more reading to do.
Sure, I'll be in the Netherworld, all right.
That's rich.
Yeah.
Honey, I'm getting smarter.
Murder in America is a true crime podcast that covers stories from all 50 states, including stories of mass shootings, serial killers, and lesser-known murders. Do you find yourself doing more research after listening to a true crime show? Well, Courtney and I used to do the same thing, and that's why we created Murder in America. Our podcast dives deep into each case. Our storytelling will make you feel like you're right there within the case with us, watching it all play out, and we do not shy away from the graphic details. If you're a fan of true crime, then listen to Murder in America on Spotify now.